And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week we had a lot of activity in court. In fact, a lot of political activity transferred itself to the courtroom. Not that there wasn't plenty of political activity outside the courtroom, but in the midst of the pandemic, with record high cases in America of people getting COVID-19, 10 million cases in the world, 125,000 deaths in America, 1.5 million new unemployed people, meaning that they will, those people, if they had health insurance, they lost their health insurance when they got laid off. In the midst of that, Trump moved in Supreme Court to declare the Affordable Care Act unconstitutional and kill it immediately, right?
Yes.
Now, yes. Is that politically sane? I don't say clever. I'm asking sane.
It is if you're a Republican. Let's face it. This is their philosophy. Paul Krugman talks about it all the time, that what they're out to do is hurt the common man. They don't like these concepts where government can help people or government can do things. And I've always said that this obstinacy that they've had really relates to two things that the Republican philosophy, why they become anti-government. One is, it goes back to the 60s, well, the 50s and the 60s, but the 60s when the parties kind of flipped on civil rights. And they don't like the fact that the government created and then enforced civil rights laws. The second thing is the big business wing of the Republican Party, which doesn't like rules or regulations. They want to be an unfettered profit machines. So you have these two driving forces that converge in terms of their purpose and their resolve to shape their philosophy and their motivation. And what we've seen over the last number of years is that we're not only getting it in terms of the executive branch, the presidency, it's in Congress. It's deeply driven in Congress because of who funds the campaigns. But now it's the battle is really over the third branch of government, the courts. And how things are going to be, interpreted, and how they're going to be enforced, and we've seen how the Republicans, and don't forget, I've mentioned there are four conservative justices on the Supreme Court, who have been put there by presidents who lost the popular vote, and what they have set out to do was to limit relief for the common person in a whole variety of ways and a whole variety of things. And we see these things coming up and up again. The Affordable Care Act is one. It was interesting when it was upheld, the swing vote was Justice Roberts. But what he did was very cleverly, he didn't uphold it under the Commerce Clause, which was the traditional way that civil rights laws had been enforced over the 50 years that they were enacted after the 1960s, the Civil Rights Act and the Voter Rights Act. He upheld it under the taxation clause of the Constitution. The Commerce Clause is much broader. Anything related to interstate commerce under the Democratic philosophy was upheld. But they're trying to get rid of this ACA because it's an overall philosophical thing with them. And they don't care how many people are going to die or are going to get hurt by this. It could backfire because if you get rid of the ACA, then what, and people can't afford, particularly now, they can't afford health insurance, and they don't have jobs. You know, 40-some million have lost jobs over time. It's a rolling number. Some get the jobs back, some don't. And the jobs don't provide health insurance. Then what's left? The only thing left is the government to provide it. So they may be digging themselves a hole without unless they, of course, say something like Medicare is unconstitutional as well. And who knows what they might come up with that.
Well, that's an interesting concept. You think that, I don't even know what to say. Medicare is probably the single most popular, with Social Security, is probably the single most popular program that the government runs in the United States, right?
Yeah.
Do you think
absolutely.
The Republicans would mount the campaign to abolish Medicare so that when you get to be old, you're destined for poverty?
Yeah, they're out to abolish Social Security, so Medicare is an adjunct of that. You know, don't forget the first thing that George W. Bush did when he was reelected, when he had all this political capital, he went out to spend it on getting rid of Social Security. He went on that tour, and it flopped because they misread the American people, but they're still, philosophically, they're still in that place.
It is true that in the last 50 years, the Republican Party has never once come up with a health care plan. Never once. No. They've always criticized the Democratic health care plans or anybody's health care plan, but they've never once been able to come up with one on their own. They don't really believe there should be one. You're right.
Remember, Trump ran on the platform, I'm going to repeal and replace.
Right.
Repeal and replace. Well, he had, as you said, they had no replacement. When John McCain put the thumbs down on the repeal, there was no replacement there. There wasn't, and there still isn't. 4 years in, you know, you hear all these people, Republicans, say, you know, well, you know, Trump is going to do all this for me. Say, where's his health care plan?
Well, but the fact is the ACA was the Republican health care plan. That was the plan that the Republicans in Massachusetts enacted. Obama thought that he'd outfox the Republicans by adopting their own plan, only to discover that they were prepared to abandon their own plan.
Yeah, they didn't. That's not what they really cared about.
Right.
They only put that plan in order to stop a
real
more
plan.
Universal plan.
Yeah,
a more universal plan. So they had that, and but getting back to this, you ask me, would they really do this? Would they really abolish it? You know, you have these judges who have become ideologues. And this week, Donald Trump took a bow for hitting a milestone that he had his 200th judicial nomination approved. I want to talk about that.
That's a staggering number.
It is a staggering number. And one of the reasons that it's that high is that Mitch McConnell slow-walked a lot of the Obama appointments, and they were left open, even though John Roberts, the Chief Justice, had said we need more judges approved. McConnell would not approve Obama nominees unless he absolutely had to. So you've got these 200 judges right now. Of course, Trump claims 300. And I have to tell you that was one of the things. That's one of the few promises that he has kept. And it was one of the reasons that he got elected was he went out and he said, I'm going to appoint conservative judges who are going to be anti-abortion, and they're going to protect, and he got a lot of the evangelicals, and he got a lot of the Catholics in the swing states to vote for him on that basis, and that's still one of the reasons you hear people say that we're going to vote for him is because the judges. But a lot of these judges are unqualified. They've never been in courtrooms. Not all of them are district judges. Most of them are district court judges, the trial level judges where most things happen. About a third of them or a quarter of them are appellate judges. Those are judges on the courts of appeals, which are very important. I want to talk about a case in a few minutes on that. And a couple of them have been to specialty courts. And of course, he had two Supreme Court justices named. Out of all of this, only 9 of the judges of the 200 are people of color. most of these judges are men, and most of them are young, some in their 30s, a lot in their 40s. And that's been the Republican modus operandi for a long time, because these appointments are lifetime appointments. They're not for a specific term. They're not like a cabinet appointment that go out. They're not like the U.S. attorneys that go out and could be terminated. These people are going to be there for 30, 40, 50 years maybe, and it's going to make a difference. This week we saw one of the differences that was made on the D.C. Court of Appeals when a Trump appointee, Judge Rao, woman judge, rendered an opinion that was quite stunning to legal experts. And this was the appeal that Bill Barr's Justice Department had taken over the Michael Flynn case, where Barr wants to dismiss all charges, even though Flynn has pled guilty. And it went to the appeals court, and the judge said, I don't know if I can do that. I want to take a look at this. And Barr says, you can't take a look at this. We're going to have the appeals court issue a writ of mandamus and tell you must dismiss it. And it, first of all, most people didn't think the appeals court would take it. They took it. And in a 2-1 decision, they now held, Judge Rao said, yeah, you have to do what the Justice Department says. The dissent was very interesting. It was an Obama appointee. And he says, we're a court of appeals. There hasn't been an order yet for us to review. How can you appeal? How can you make an appellate decision on something that wasn't decided? But this is the extent and I call it tampering with the law, the extremism of the law of Trump appointees and Republican appointees.
What was the reasoning of Judge Rao?
She basically said that she bought the Bill Barr argument that the prosecution was tainted. And therefore, should not. This was on a further review, and they shouldn't have been charged in the first place, type of thing. But these are the kind of extreme decisions that you're starting to see, and you're starting to get with GOP appointed judges, particularly Trump judges. Some of their ideas are way out there. They were never in the mainstream of judicial thought. Some of these new ideas were only thought up in the last 20 years by this Federalist Society and what have you. The ideas of Bob Bork and now Clarence Thomas.
Well, and Scalia. How about Scalia?
Scalia, yeah.
Scalia brought you the current Second Amendment, which the constitutional authors didn't bring you.
Yes. That's true. Although Scalia did leave a loophole in it. He said there are things that there may be reasonable reasons to limit the right of persons to individually bear arms. But he did come in and say that they had the right to bear arms.
Yeah.
So we're seeing that. And we're going to see all these other things challenged and what have you. You see people yelling for their freedom not to wear masks. They're challenging whether or not the executives in states or in cities can compel people to wear masks or to be quarantined and things like that. I came up with an idea this week. You know, there's no constitutional right to infect other people, but they don't seem to care. There was a spectacle in Palm Beach or West Palm Beach, Florida, where the council was voting to require masks, and these people got up when it's turned for the audience to speak, and it was Looney Tunes, absolutely Looney Tunes, but they actually believe this stuff. And this is the extremism that we're seeing in the judicial branches. And you're hearing or seeing cases.
You know, most of the people who are against wearing masks, aside from the extreme right-wing anarchists, are people who are anti-vaxxers, who think that vaccinations will make you sick.
Yes.
Well, Trump's whole argument is that the vaccine will save you. It's a kind of a contradictory situation in his own group that his strongest supporters don't believe that what he wants to do will work. Just the opposite. They think what he wants to do will make you more sick.
Well, they'll, they'll take it one stage at a time. Right now, yeah. He's against masks. He's leading by bad example by not wearing a mask, and Pence isn't wearing a mask, and whatever. And they'll take that at this point. And then they'll worry about vaccines later. They'll claim religious exemptions. Don't forget, we have some of those cases up in the Supreme Court. I was wrong last week. I thought we were going to get a couple decisions. We didn't. We're definitely getting them this week. One of them is on religious exemptions for hiring and stuff. But a lot of people have asked for religious exemptions from other rules and regulations, vaccines being part of them.
But now they want moral objections to be equal to religious objections.
Right.
And so in other words, if you don't want to follow the law, whatever the law might be, and you can claim that it conflicts with your sincere beliefs, then you don't have to follow the law, meaning there's no law.
Right. Yeah, essentially that's what it is. I want to hold slaves. My religious beliefs say I want to hold slaves.
Yeah.
It's in the Bible. Why not?
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Who are you to say? God had slaves.
And this is also that conflict that we had in, that was born out in the 2016 election, whether I alone can do things or whether it takes a village, whether we're all in this together. All of this is tied in. All of this is tied in, but at different ways of looking at things.
Well, and, despite this, isn't it true, haven't you noticed that from Trump himself, you get the feeling that he's thrown in the towel? This week, it seemed to me, Trump revealed that he does not think he can get reelected. And I think that makes his whole group more desperate to do whatever they can do horrible in the next 3 or 4 months, because they're not going to have any more time. But it really does seem like Trump has thrown in the towel.
Well, they were... one thing that you heard, and I think it's absolutely true, is Trump didn't really enjoy being president in many respects. He enjoys the power trip. He enjoys the ego of it, the pomp and the circumstances. He's all, as a friend of mine used to say, all sizzle and no steak. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like doing policy. He doesn't like detail. He doesn't like being... hold up in the White House. He doesn't like being in Washington. He'd rather be in New York or on the golf course. Of course, he spent a lot of time on the golf course. He doesn't like all of that. I don't think he likes being questioned by the press and things like that. And so psychologically, deep down, there's this thought that he really doesn't want to be president and what have you. But that body language that he displayed coming back from that failed rally in Tulsa last Sunday morning was really remarkable. He got off the helicopter all alone. It's the wee hours of the morning. His shirt was open at the collar. His tie was undone, and he holding a MAGA hat, and he walked across the lawn of the White House, but his body language was terrible. It looked like a defeated man. He was hoping that he loves these rallies where he gets the adulation of the crowd and the adoration of the crowd, and he feeds off of that stuff. And when he got there and he looked out, and they were, his campaign manager said, we had 100, 300, 800,000, a million requests for tickets. And he looked up an arena, and there was only 6,200 people, and the overflow pen outside was absolutely empty. That was a big shock to him. And I think it took a lot out of him, and it may have been a turning point in terms of his campaign. The pundits have been talking about him pivoting or whatever, and he doesn't seem to, he's never displayed an ability to pivot. I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to go down with this ship.
Well, he was on the Hannity show this week, and Hannity asked him a question, what's your plans for the second term? And, of course, he had nothing to say. But what he did say was, well, Biden This is a quote. Biden will be your president because not enough people seem to love me. And I'm just trying to do my job. Biden will be your president. What are your plans for the second term? Biden will be your president. Hannity had nothing to say.
No. No.
What candidate ever says my opponent is going to win?
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is a guy that you say, you know, don't take what he says literally, but take him seriously. But a guy who says that is telling you what's in his heart.
Yeah. I mean, everything he says is either A, the truth, or B, projection.
Yeah.
And here I think he was telling the truth in terms of what he thought. You know, I do want to go back a second here because you mentioned about we're in danger as to what they can do over the next few months if they think they're going to lose. Mm-hmm. And they could do a lot wrong. I happen to think that perhaps the most dangerous time would be after the day after the election when the results come in, if in fact Biden wins.
Or the weekend when they finally count the votes.
Yeah. But I think that night you're going to have a pretty good idea. And and January 20th, those 2.5 months, a lot of damage can be done. I could see Mitch McConnell pushing through as many judicial nominees as possible. All sorts of shenanigans, all sorts of orders going out. I mean, he's issued orders this week to protect Confederate statues, including Confederate statues and all this stuff. And, you're going to see pardons like you've never seen them before, things like that. That could be a real dangerous time in America, and very hard to undo some of that stuff. As I said, the judges can't be undone.
Can the Democrats prevent a quorum from being in existence by not showing up in the Senate?
I don't know the Senate rules that well, to tell you that.
Yeah.
They might be able to. They haven't pulled that off yet.
I mean, the Republicans have done that in various state legislatures, including in Washington State. I remember they all emigrated to Idaho just so they couldn't be found.
Yeah, they did that, I think, briefly in Wisconsin. They did it in Texas once.
Yep.
I remember that. So I don't know. And if there's a shift in the Senate, if the Democrats win the Senate, who knows what's going to go on, or maybe the impetus will dissuade the Republicans in the Senate from doing things, although I doubt it.
Which Republicans would be swayed? Certainly if Joni Ernst loses, or if any of these Republicans lose, they'll do whatever damage they can do because they're only going to be there another few weeks.
Well, those that at least tried to keep their reputations, maybe, but I don't know.
Nah.
I don't hold out a great amount of hope.
No. I understand also that the Democrats have changed the convention rules. Now, you're a convention delegate, so you know all about this. So what are the changes in the rules, and what are the Democrats going to do in their convention that the Republicans are not going to do?
Well, alternate delegate, but I was on the delegate call this week. They issued a set of so-called instructions. There's a lot of TBDs to be determined on there, but what they've said is don't come to Milwaukee. We're not going to have the big raucous convention that we had planned. And we're not going to have the auxiliary events that go around conventions. I mean, that's the fun stuff of a convention, mm-hmm. going to different meetings and parties and this and that. Mm-hmm. They said they're going to move the convention to a smaller arena, to a smaller venue, that Joe Biden will accept the nomination there in person, and that there will be people there, but they haven't said who will be there yet. They intend to have satellite meetings because the states still have to vote to put Biden over the top. And by the way, he's continued to win huge margins in the states that are still voting in terms of delegates and percentages. And the rest of it is kind of up in the air. Oh, they did say that the committees, including the platform committee, are going to meet virtually as well, which is a big deal. The platform committee is important of all of those. So, but everything else, they said they're still working on. They better work on it quick. You know, this type of thing has never been held before. They've hired people who've produced big events like the Emmys and what have you to do the stagecraft and on this. One thing that I'm worried about, they didn't talk about was very much, was the security. You know, when you're in person, very heavy security. I was on buses in the last election that went from the Pennsylvania Delegate Hotel to the Wells Fargo Center in Philly, and there were armed SWAT team guards on each bus. But what I'm worried about now is if you're doing virtual convention, is people trying to crash the Zoom or however you're doing it, as has been done in certain things. And that would not, you know, it would not surprise me if the Russians or the Chinese trying to embarrass the Democrats and get a shot at them that they can't run things, tried to do this. Or, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if some of the Trumpinistas try to do this as well. The true believers try to do it. And that's something that they'd have, I think, that they really have to work on.
But the Republicans have no such plans, right? The Republicans, as far as I can see, are determined to have the same kind of mass meeting convention as was typical for most of the 20th century. Not typical for most of the history of the country. These types of conventions really are post-World War I events. They were before that, the nominee never even appeared at the convention.
But anyway, we had a preview of it when Trump went to Phoenix with those 3,000 kids in a church.
Right.
No, you know, masks optional type of thing, yelling and screaming, and they want to do this. Now, of course, it's going to be interesting because Florida is one of those states that opened up early, never really took seriously the governor there, DeSantis, never really took seriously the warnings, and now Florida's spiking,
right,
in terms of cases, and
I think that Senator Scott, the Florida senator, he even said that they ought not to do this kind of convention, that it was too dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, when Rick Scott says that, things are
interesting. Yeah, I mean, Rick Scott. Yeah. Who's out of jail by the skin of his, just the luck of the draw because of stealing money from Medicaid when he was the head of HCA, one of the largest health companies in the country, and who's been the governor and the senator. When he says you ought not to do this, pay attention.
Yeah. Well, we're looking at, people talked about a second wave coming late in the year. What we really are having is a continuing of the first wave. It's more now like a tsunami where the water just keeps coming. It doesn't go out and come back.
Yeah.
It just keeps coming. And, we're seeing that and we're having that. By the way, talking about being out of jail by the skin of your teeth, just a small note this week, Jack Abramoff got arrested again, the former Republican operative who went to jail previously.
Wasn't he pardoned?
He might have been.
But I think Bush pardoned him.
Well, he's whatever. He did it again.
Did it again.
Maybe he did it again.
And so I say that because we have a million people in jail who have not yet been tried. And under our system, you're innocent until you're proven guilty. But we have a million people locked up who can't get to court because the courts are still closed for the most part, who don't make bail because maybe they haven't had bail set or they can't afford bail, in situations where the coronavirus is ripping through the prisons, where the prisons are one of the main vectors, together with the nursing homes and the packing houses, for infection and death, where you have federal prisons with the one in Marion, 5,000 cases of coronavirus. And so you have a bunch of people, a million people, at risk of being killed because they've been arrested. They haven't even been haven't even been tried yet, much less found guilty.
Well, they're letting people out, like Michael Cohen and Judge Conahan got out this week from the Kids.
Those people got out, but these people can't get out.
No, the white-collar guys get out.
Yeah. Rashida Tlaib from Detroit has introduced a bill saying they ought to release these people on conditional release because why should they die? They haven't been convicted of anything. The ramifications of the government's failure, the comprehensive failure of the government, are just staggering. But anyway, we have no more time. We've run out of time.
Okay. Next, that's one reason I think Trump doesn't want to lose, is this may be keeping him out of jail, by the way.
It may be.
See
you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time.